Ryan, it's Friday of iCast week, but this is the first time ever in the history of me going to iCast that my feet haven't hurt.
Yeah, same with the knees and the back and the strained voice.
I have missed walking around and seeing all the new stuff, but hopefully this week folks have gotten to see some stuff on the iCast website and checked out myfwc.com/iCast at some of the programs we've talked about. We've got one more to go through today.
And one thing that's great about this virtual iCast is the public has, you know, more access to see different things like the new product showcase or what different manufacturers have to offer.
So today, what program are we talking to?
Today, we're going to talk about the Artificial Wreath program.
Okay. And who do we have from FWC joining us?
We have Keith Milley and Amanda Nally.
Keith, good morning.
Good morning, Travis.
How are you?
Doing okay.
Good. Tell me who is Keith Milley?
So my name is Keith Milley. I work in the Division of Marine Fisheries Management with the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. I'm originally from New York and grew up fishing, saltwater fishing with my father on the South Shore of Long Island on his little John boat. 26 years ago, I moved down here and started working with the agency and fisheries independent monitoring, and then moved through, did some regulatory work. And for the last 19 years, I've been with the Florida Artificial Reef Program here in Tallahassee.
Before we get into artificial reefs, Amanda, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Amanda Nally, am I saying that right?
That's correct.
You've already been on this week, and I have, when we recorded these, I had no idea what order they'd go in. So you may have already introduced yourself, but let's do it again. Who is Amanda Nally?
Sure. So I'm the public information specialist for marine fisheries. So basically, I get paid to talk about saltwater fishing all day, which is just the best job ever. And I'm originally from Mississippi, from the coast, grew up fishing there, saltwater and freshwater. Yeah, now I'm here in Florida. I've been here with the agency for almost 9 years.
So we're talking artificial reefs today. Keith, tell me, what is an artificial reef? Reef, not a reef. An artificial reef is what you hang on your front door at Christmas. An artificial reef is a fisheries thing. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. So it's actually a Florida statute is what creates our artificial reef program and Division of Marine Fisheries. And one of the primary goals is directed by statute is to enhance saltwater fishing opportunities. But also another important component of that is to utilize artificial reefs as a component of fisheries management. So those, I guess, are the two overarching guiding principles for our program.
How many artificial reefs do we have in Florida?
At the moment, we have over 3,600 artificial reefs. These are patch reefs throughout the Atlantic and Gulf Coast. And these could be anything from, you know, one piece of concrete or to a large ship or multiple structures throughout the state of Florida.
Can we talk for a second about, you sent me an outline initially that's kind of like a who, what, when, where, why, how. I don't know if who matters there. But anyway, you sent me an outline that kind of outlined that. Can we talk for a minute about the construction of these artificial reefs? Like, what do you use? Do you just take anything out there? And then I also want to discuss, you mentioned about tires the other day. We talked about tires. So when we get done with construction, I want to pivot to that. But you can't just, I think originally my conversation is like, when I imagine an artificial reef, I think of a guy sinking in freshwater. Obviously, this is a saltwater program. In freshwater, you think of a guy sinking Christmas trees. In saltwater, in my mind, it's like, are we just putting junk out there? And you guys don't. Like, this is a very well thought out, very, very nuanced thing that you're doing. So kind of take us through that.
Yeah, well, there's certainly obviously a lot of big distinctions between the freshwater man-made habitat versus what we do in saltwater, especially our program, which really emphasizes strongly in the offshore reef fish habitat. You know, when we, you know, Florida, we have a lot of storm activity, and we need to make sure that these structures are going to be durable and stable for the long term. And looking across those 3,600 artificial reefs that we have statewide, almost 3/4 of those are concrete. And that's because of their durability and their stability. And of those, about half of them are secondary use concrete, which would be concrete culverts, concrete manholes, concrete bridge structures. And the other half are concrete design modules. These are specifically designed structures with complexity for specific species or specific habitat types that really have emerged over the past 20 years, I'd say. And then we have 531 steel ships, barges, vessels, you know, tugboats around the state of Florida. And then we have 8% that are metal structures that mostly bridge spans. For example, 3% are rock boulders. And then we have the 2% materials that are, you know, many of those are no longer permitted, which, as you mentioned, you know, could be something like a tire.
So tell me about that. Like I know when we talked before, you had mentioned tires. Tell me why that's not a good reef material. Like, explain that. I know that fiberglass boats is another one that you don't really like to use.
Correct. So
can you kind of talk through the selectivity there? Why you don't like
this? Yeah, tires and fiberglass boats are really good examples of the early years of the program where sometimes the objectives were driven more by a waste disposal problem. And in the 1970s and even into the 80s, you know, before we had the modern tire recycling and waste energy program that we have now, we had stockpiles of tires around the state of Florida. From rainfall, these would accumulate mosquitoes. It became a human health problem. And, you know, folks at the time looked to artificial reefs as a way to help resolve this waste disposal problem. You know, they looked at tires and said, well, these are going to be long lived. It's rubber. They're not going to degrade. However, a 25-pound tire on land weighs only 5 pounds in water. Also, they have to be strapped together. And it was shortly after these were deployed in the 70s and 80s that whatever was holding them together started to come apart. These tires started to move. And they ended up on our beaches, up on top of the reef. They ended up into channels, so we were unable to go dredging. So there were a lot of lessons learned. And same thing with fiberglass boat hulls. They also don't stay in place. And so they have long been prohibited. And it really helped, I think, ferment our program to realize that the primary objective needs to be the fisheries habitat enhancement. You know, and while we still continue to use secondary use materials and to help, you know, provide a beneficial use for waste disposal options, that is a much lower secondary, you know, objective. Our primary objective, again, to create those fishing opportunities and make sure we're doing no harm to the environment.
And in addition, you know, another group that we didn't mention is divers as well. We're also starting to see a lot of more inshore reefs becoming popular and things that are accessible to people even from the coast, snorkeling out, you know, to a reef and diving those reefs as well. So diving and kayak fishing, you know, kayak fishing is becoming increasingly popular and is such a great way to get out on the water, such an accessible way for many people to get out on the water. And, you know, we're having a lot more, well, our focus is on offshore reefs. We're also seeing, you know, a lot of great opportunities for some inshore reefs as well. I know Keith had mentioned Tampa Bay as a place that has a lot of reefs and activities for folks that want to maybe look at some other ways to access those reefs.
Now, Keith, I think when we've talked before, you've mentioned you can get a saturation point on inshore reefs, and also there's some other concerns. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? Because you really want to spread this out. There's a holistic it's a holistic solution, right? You're trying to cover opportunities for anglers, both inshore, nearshore, and offshore. But what are one of the other challenge? Some of the other challenges to inshore reefs?
Yeah. Obviously, you know, and actually, even before we determined, you know, the material types that are going to be deployed as an artificial reef, we need to think about the location and where these are going to go. And I think a lot of folks, you know, really probably don't realize that, you know, when they head out on their boat and you exit that inlet or the pass and you start heading out into the open Gulf, you know, there's a lot of designated zones that are in that area that need to be avoided and are not suitable for artificial reef construction. These include obviously channels and navigational fairways, but there's, you know, natural habitat down there that we'll avoid, whether it's seagrass or natural bottom. And then there's also man-made features that we avoid, such as gas pipeline or telecommunication corridors. And there's areas, sandy bottom areas, that are used for shrimp trawling, and we need to avoid those as well. So we do that kind of exclusionary mapping to select appropriate locations. And once you conclude that exclusionary mapping, then you're only left with kind of a limited area. And obviously offshore, that area is much larger. But when you look inshore, where you have a lot of seagrass, a lot of other uses of the bay bottom areas, that area is much smaller. And in the case of Hillsborough County, Tampa Bay, like Amanda mentioned, you know, there are a lot of excellent, you know, artificial habitats in there that were resulting from past bridge spans and such that are great fishing spots. And the county's kind of explored other opportunities in there. But really, you know, a lot of the areas have already been built out and you only have so much room to work with. So you have to be very strategic. And so we've kind of even in areas where there's plenty of room, we're still being very strategic in how and what we place and where we place the materials.
Is predation a factor? Like changing the predatory structure? Like, so you bring, if you create an artificial structure, now you got bigger game fish hanging around it that could impact a nursery?
Oh, absolutely. When you're doing your planning, you really need to think about the ecological landscape of where you're building these. And we're building high quality, you know, typically, especially if we're building it for purpose of to enhance fishing opportunities, obviously, we're going to want to bring in those legal sized fish. And in some cases, if it's in proximity to, you know, a seagrass habitat, you know, it may have other unintended consequences by bringing in larger, like you mentioned, predatory fish that could have consequences on some of the nursery areas potentially.
Now, let's talk about how, because this is all great and good. Like, as a fisherman, I appreciate this because it's giving me an opportunity. We've talked to boating access. We've talked to the Catch a Florida Memory, the trophy catch programs. Like, this is another opportunity for me to go catch fish because you're building these reefs, which are going to be fish havens. But isn't there also a data side of this, a science side of this? And how does that kind of fit into this conversation?
Yeah. So there's a lot of science and research that we funded over the years that helps us, you know, drive the locations and the habitats that we're constructing. You know, also when you think about fisheries management, we are often, you know, managing our stocks based on landings data, for example. You know, we could be in a situation where artificial reefs are actually improving the catch rate, increasing the landings, and that potentially might have to be factored into the stock assessment process. Now, we can use artificial reefs in fisheries management to help, you know, we're influencing where people are going fishing, especially our visitors, you know, the people that come down here for a good vacation. They don't have the time to go out in their own boats and explore different areas and build up their logbook and figure out what they're catching where. So they can easily go to our website and download these artificial reef locations and go fish at those spots. You know, this is one of the reasons why they're so popular. Well, we can use that to our advantage in Florida in that we can help direct where people are fishing. So we are using bag limits and size limits to kind of manage how people are fishing on the size of the fish that are catching and what fish they're catching. But we can use artificial reefs to kind of influence where they're fishing as well. And in doing so, we can potentially reduce fishing pressure on other more sensitive areas.
Before we pivot away from the science for a second, I just think it's fascinating. Can you talk a little bit about the gag grouper study Dr. Lindbergh did? You were telling me about that the other day. Can you just elaborate on that just a little bit, how that informed, like the artificial reefs program helped inform some data there?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the work that Dr. Lindbergh has done over the past 25 years has really been cool and has helped us think about artificial reefs differently. His work on gag grouper has a unique lifestyle where they'll spend, you know, their juvenile will be in the Big Bend area of the Gulf of Mexico, for example. The juveniles will be in the seagrass habitats. And the age 1 to 4 year old fish will kind of move across the landscape and over patchy hard bottom area and until they reach their adult phase, which is going to be in the deep water offshore habitat. And that's where they're going to spawn and the cycle starts again. Well, it's during that 1 to 4 year old age where they're moving across that landscape where there's not as much habitat and they're very vulnerable to predation by sharks and other larger fish and such. So Dr. Lindbergh hypothesized that we can use artificial reefs to create shelter for these fish and improve their growth rates and reduce their mortality, reduce predation and improve their growth rate. So his study looked at different size of patch reefs, 16 cube, 8 cube, and 4 cube patch reef size. And what he found was very interesting, that the 16 cube patch reefs, they held more fish, right? But it was on the smaller 4 cube patch reefs that he actually found that they were a better growth rate. Because gag grouper, they're very gregarious. They like to be together. So if you think about a city, you know, like an apartment complex, they all want to crowd together. And, you know, you can check out some of the photos on some of his reports and you'll see they'll just pack in there like sardines in these small openings. Well, in doing so, obviously, you know, they're foraging around the habitat. There's not as much available forage area with those higher densities fish. So the smaller cube patch reefs, they provide shelter, but also they found that there was a 15% better growth rate on those smaller units. Additionally, if you apply fishing pressure and, you know, you have fishermen that are focusing on these larger artificial reef sites, you can actually increase fishing pressures too. So you have, reduced growth rates, increased fishing pressure, and it really can, start driving the stock in the wrong direction. So from his research, we've really recognized the value of these isolated, smaller patch reefs. They're kind of hard to find, hard to fish, but they're also better growth rate for the fish as well.
So Keith, we've talked about this entire week about Sportfish Restoration Fund, Dingle Johnson Act, like I think for you guys, it's Wallop Bro, but how the money kind of supports these programs that FWC is doing. Can you just go into that a little bit and kind of touch on that?
Yeah, sure. Funding, public funding and the federal funding from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Sportfish Restoration has been critical for Florida's artificial reef development. About half of our artificial reefs in the state of Florida were funded in part by the Sportfish Restoration Program. The other half comes from local contributions from local governments and private donations as well, and other nonprofit groups such as the CCA, who have really stepped up in the last 5 years. I really got to hand it to them for helping to contribute to our offshore artificial reef construction as well.
If folks want to know more about the artificial reefs program, I'm sure you guys got maps out there, everything else. Where can they go? Where can they find out all this information?
Yeah, so we're housing everything on myfwc.com/ICAST right now. This will give you links to all of the things that we've talked about during the week, but also to our artificial reefs program. Our artificial reefs page has a lot of really great information from, if you want to access information about where these reefs are, we have a map that's interactive that you can kind of pinpoint exactly where a reef is. We also have that information in an Excel spreadsheet form. And in other ways that you want to access it, we've got the history of the program, how it's funded. A lot of really great information on those pages, as well as on our ICAST page.
And then, Keith, you guys have a summit? Tell me about this, like some kind of an event coming up?
Yeah, we're having an artificial reef summit. We do it statewide. We do it about once every 5 years or so. And it's planned to be held in November, the first week of November, in Melbourne Beach. We partner with Florida Sea Grant, who have really been great in recording all of the presentations on their webpage through their Facebook Live page. At this point, we're not sure how much of it is going to be live or virtual, but either way, it's all going to be accessible to everyone virtually through the Florida Sea Grant Facebook Live Artificial Reef page. We expect about 200 people to be there. These are all the county artificial reef managers. So that's the other point. If folks want to get more involved in contributing to artificial reef planning, the local fishing clubs are really a critical component of helping us determine where to build and what species are in need of enhanced fishing opportunities, and that we might be able to contribute using artificial reefs. So each of our 36 counties across Florida has an artificial reef coordinator that I work with, and I would be glad to put any individuals in touch with those folks so they can get more involved.
It's a super tactile way that people can get connected to the artificial reefs program. So thank you guys both. This is such a cool program. I appreciate y'all taking some time to chat about it with us.
Glad to be here. Thanks for the opportunity, Travis.
Thanks for having us.
Ryan, we can download it in Excel and probably import it into a GPS somehow. I don't know about this magic and witchcraft, but I'm signing up for that like right now so I can know exactly where to go. I just became a much better fisherman.
Yeah, and the information is outlined in such a way that, novices with computers like me can even get the information and use it. So it's really user friendly.
Ryan, this has been a lot of fun this week. Thank you for doing it with us and hanging out. And thank you to everyone, KP, Drew, Laura, Amanda, Keith, Jill Christofferson, the whole crew that got together and did this with us. Thank you so much to FWC and everyone and Ryan for hanging out all week and making sure I didn't go too far off the rails.
Oh man, it was my pleasure, and thanks to you for letting us talk about some of the programs that we have to provide fishing and boating access to the people of Florida and people that visit Florida.
So much fun. All right, buddy. Have a great weekend.
You too.
That's a wrap for Virtual ICAST with FWC and Cast and Blast Florida. Thank you again to everyone from FWC that gave so much of their time and was willing to come on and chat about these different programs with us. I think I learned a lot. Hope you guys did too. I want to remind you guys, we have a show, Cast and Blast Florida, every Tuesday. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of goofing off. We talk about hunting, we talk about fishing, but we may talk about anything and everything under the sun. So make sure to check that out. And then on Thursdays, we do conversations, Cast and Blast conversations, which are interviews with interesting folks as they pertain to hunting, fishing, conservation, water quality, anything around the state and or tangentially connected to the state. Make sure if you're not already doing it, you follow us on social media at Cast and Blast FL. And leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you can figure out a way to do that. The best way you can help our show out is for you to tell a friend about it. However you do that, you can share it on social media. You can email it to someone. You can just tap someone at the water cooler and say, hey, have you listened to this podcast? Thank you guys so much for hanging with us, and we will see y'all next week.